Coach P's perspective. Serve God, work hard, family coach, and play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch got your back, coach. 96, we do the notes. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey, thanks so much for joining me on Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. Tell you what, man, if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I'm here. I got you. That's what we do on Coach P's Perspective. You know, one of my ultimate goals here is I want to help you identify principles that you can apply in your journey to personal growth and success. And the bottom line is this. When you listen to these episodes, we want to provide you with a dose of strength that can help you take on life's most significant challenges and succeed. And if we're doing that, if you enjoy it, hey, I ask you to run over to Apple Podcasts real quick. Give us a 5-star review, maybe a short written review, and then share these podcasts. You know, you can share them out on social media. You can get the link and share these out. That's how we grow the podcast. That's how we spread the message. You know, and ultimately, we want to positively impact you as a person, your home, your community, this nation, and the world. All right. Hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped today. I have Coach Jim Harshaw Jr. with me, and I like to call you Coach. I know that today, Coach, you are doing more life and executive and personal coaching, but you are a former Division I wrestling coach. And anyone who has been a coach, like, so I know you're probably this way. Anyone who's ever coached me in my life, I will never call them by their first name.
Yeah, they're so, Coach.
Yeah, they're Coach. And so for me, as I follow you, I listen to your podcast, follow your social media. Even though you aren't my direct coach, you're Coach. You know, so
a lot of my clients. Funny, a lot of my clients actually call me Coach. So, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, absolutely. So, a little bit about Coach Harshaw. So, he is a TEDx speaker. He is a performance coach, former Division I All American wrestler, former Division I head wrestling coach, University of Virginia. Today, he runs one of my favorite podcast shows, which is Success Through Failure. And then he does executive coaching and a number of other things that we're going to get into in a minute. So, Coach, man, thanks for being on my podcast, Coach P's Perspective. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks for having me on, Chad.
Yeah, you bet. So, you know, I, like you, I talk to a lot of high performers, and I want to go in and see, like, what are the things that you do that allow you to succeed on a high level, right? Because I believe that principles are principles, and once you know them, then you can apply them in multiple areas. And so, but because we're wrestling guys, I want to kind of start back with your journey. So tell me, like, how did you get into the sport of wrestling? And then I know, you know, you wrestled through college. So just kind of take us back in Genesis through your college career.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up wrestling in Western Pennsylvania, grew up in a small town, rural town. We didn't have a post office, and just that's what we did. Everybody played football, baseball, and wrestling. That's just what you did. And, you know, my first few years, I took my lumps just like everybody else, and then started experiencing a little bit of success in my third year. And one of my elementary school teammates was a guy by the name of Teague Moore, head wrestling coach at American University now. And Teague and I used to just bloody each other up in the elementary school wrestling room and just scrap and battle. And we had good coaching from a young age, and it just kind of it worked for me, right? Every sport's a little bit different for everybody else. I liked the sense of control that you have over your own destiny. You're not depending on somebody else. You can't hide behind anybody else, and that just appealed to me from a young age. I mean, I played baseball, I played football, I did all the sports, ran track growing up, and soccer, etc. But wrestling just stuck with me, and went through. Fast forward a little bit, and I got to middle school and high school, and I did everything, Chad. I mean, I did everything that you're supposed to do to maximize your potential. I wrestled year round, freestyle, Greco, you name it. I went to back when you could do cadet nationals and junior nationals, and both styles, I did that. Like, there's one year where cadets and juniors overlapped, and you'd go out and you go out to cadets and you do Greco and freestyle, and then you come home for a couple of weeks, and then you go out to juniors and you'd wrestle Greco, then freestyle. I did that, and wrestled year round and had high goals, and had my goals to win a Pennsylvania state championship. And not only did I not win a Pennsylvania state championship, I never got on the podium. I never even got on the podium at Pennsylvania at the state championships. And, I remember the drive home from Hershey, Pennsylvania, my senior year, like hiding in the back seat of the 15 passenger van, like hoping nobody could see me crying back there on the back seat. Just hopes, dreams, goals dashed. Guys who I beat in freestyle and Greco, one guy knocked me out of the tournament. Guys were getting on the podium and on the top of the podium. These are guys who I trained with. And I know I did every bit as much as them, if not more than a lot of them. And I wasn't getting the same results. So that was my journey through high school. I can continue through college unless you have any questions at this point.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. So college was a pretty similar story through most of it. I got to the University of Virginia. I was part of the top 10 recruiting class in the country. I probably would have been ranked higher if it wasn't for me, to be honest. I was not one of the marquee guys in the recruiting class. And I remember literally one night walking home, from the bars, as a freshman, not that I drank, I didn't do any of that stuff, but walking home and two of my buddies were talking about how they were going to be all Americans and national champions. And I'm thinking like, man, that must be cool. Like they're going to go do that. And I'm obviously not as good as them because they were both state champions. And man, I wish I was as good as those guys. I remember that. I remember that having that conversation. And I went through most of my career like that. Most of my college career, just thinking I'm not good enough. I'm not capable enough. Just having that subtle self-doubt in my mindset until, my coaches, Lenny Bernstein and Mike Krafcik and Charlie Branch and Brendan Buckley, and in particular, Donnie Reyes. And then in particular, one guy named John McGovern. John McGovern, he was only our assistant coach for 1 year, but John, he's the head coach at Dubuque University now. But my first memory of McGov was this. I was doing low rows on the machine in the weight room. And this is his first experience with us. He had gotten hired. This is his first, he's in the weight room with us as a team. This is his first team, like sort of thing with us. So I put the weights down and he goes, sit back down. And he pulled the pin out and he dropped it down like five blocks. And he goes, now do it. And I couldn't do them as well. And my technique wasn't as good, but I could just gut them out as many as I could. And that was like, oh, okay. Like your expectations are too low. Right. And then he started talking about, becoming a national champion. I'm like, what are you talking about? Don't you know who I am and my background? And he didn't care, right? He just saw the most in you. And so John was he was a Division III national champion. He was the Hawkeye club coach out at Iowa. And so he knew Lincoln McIlravey. So Lincoln McIlravey, three-time NCAA champion, world silver medalist. So I'm at the national championships and I've got to wrestle. This is Lincoln's senior year. This is 1997, Northern Iowa, Gables last year. And I'm wrestling the Lincoln McIlravey, undefeated number one seed. I step on the mat, I'm warming up for this match. And McGovern gets in my head and convinces me that I'm going to beat Lincoln McIlravey. I mean, and I step on the mat. This guy like brainwashed me. I step on the mat, like knowing that I'm going to beat Lincoln, I'm the guy that knocks him off. Like, and it was just a matter of fact thing. And I stepped on the mat and this is where the story kind of goes off track, but I got teched. I got crushed. It was just a man versus a boy. He's a senior. I'm a sophomore. And it just, he's just far and away the better wrestler. But here's the lesson that I took out of that. I realized that my only possibility that I was going to beat Lincoln McIlravey was if I believed. Mm-hmm. And I did believe. Now my chances went from like 1 in 1,000 to like 1 in 100, but my chances improved tenfold. And so I carried that into my next match thinking like, okay, this just believe in yourself thing. It's like, it's okay. It doesn't hurt anymore to believe in yourself. So I stepped onto the mat the next round with the 6th ranked guy in the country and I knocked him off. And it was my first win over a top 10 ranked opponent. And this was a life-changing experience for me. And that carried me through the rest of my career, just that shift in mindset. And until I got to my senior year, I realized this is your last shot, your last chance to achieve something meaningful. And I kept, my goal every year is to be an All-American. Then eventually it was to be a national champion. I'd shifted that mindset, but I failed every year. And here we go into my fourth and final year in college. and literally thinking like, I haven't figured out the secret to getting to that next level. And so I gave up on my dream of becoming an All-American, and I realized that all I can do is all I can do. Like, I can't win a match. All I can do is eat the right foods, get to bed at the right time, train correctly, rehab injuries, watch film, warm up properly, step on the mat, make first contact, attack as hard as I can. If I get taken down, explode off bottom. If I get a takedown, break the guy down. I can run back to the center and beat the guy to the middle every single time. Like, that's all I can do, and I'm going to be okay with that. If that takes me to the top of the podium or another season ending, falling short of my goals, I'm okay. I can sleep at night knowing that I've done all I can do. And that took me through my senior year, and I had the most amazing year of my life. Knocked off the fourth ranked wrestler in the country from Minnesota on the number one ranked team in the country at the time to become an All-American and it finally achieve a meaningful goal. So, it was a career mostly of failure that ended with what I feel was success.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's good to hear because, you know, and we're going to talk about it more in a minute, you know, success through failure. But so many people don't see behind the scenes, right? They just see like, hey, Coach Harshaw was a D1 All-American. They didn't see like what happens. Like you said, you did every single thing right in high school. So my dad's a National Hall of Fame wrestling coach. You know, I live in Kansas now, but I'm from Oklahoma. So I'm very familiar with Teague Moore, you know, wrestler for Oklahoma State.
Yep.
And anyway, so many guys may do that, right? A lot of guys don't do the right thing, but put their heart and soul into it, doing all the right things and then don't achieve what they want. Or they do, but it wasn't like you got there from point A to point B. There was like an up and down or squiggly lines that happened between point A and B to get to success. And so,
that's right.
Yeah. So to hear that is amazing. So, you know, anyone who's listening to this, a lot of wrestling parents, coaches, wrestlers that'll be listening to this, you know, it's not always easy. It's not always simple. And sometimes you do all the right things and you don't achieve your goals. So we talk constantly about controlling the controllables.
That's it.
Yeah.
Focus on the process, not the outcome, because you can't control the outcome. This is the same with my clients now. And I'm, you know, doing life coaching and executive coaching is you can't control whether you get the promotion, whether you secure the venture capital, whether, you know, you get the raise, whatever it is. Like, you can't control the outcome, but there are certain things within there that you can control. And let's focus on those. Let's control those. And I mean, be honest, one of those is mindset, right? One of those is like, do I actually believe it? You know, because if you take, I use this example with one of my clients the other day. I said, if you take a Kyle Snyder, and let's say you're Kyle Snyder's coach in like, I don't know, like sixth grade, and this Kyle Snyder has all the potential, everything that the real Kyle Snyder has, except for this Kyle Snyder says to you, my goal is to be a starter on the high school wrestling team. That's his ultimate goal. If that's what he believes his cap is and his limit is he going to be an Olympic gold medalist? No, he's not. Same person, doing the same actions, doing the same training. He's not going to get there just because he's limiting himself. So you have to carry that belief. You have to do all the right things, and you have to believe. You have to believe. Suspend your own beliefs for a second and believe that just maybe this is possible for me. And when you match those two things, you know, great things can happen.
Yeah. And it's one of the reasons why it's so huge to have a coach, not only as an athlete, right? But as an adult, like every area of your life, it's so huge to have a coach. So I had wrestled at NAIA school. We won a national title. When I walked in, I just made a decision. I don't know how I'm going to do, but I'm going to train with the All-Americans every day. I'm going to train with the national champions every day. I'm going to hang with them whenever we run. I'm going to lift weights with them. I'm going to jump in their group and wrestle. The next year I transferred to a JUCO, ended up becoming an All-American. But my coach there, like you said, he brainwashed me. He built that belief. I remember we went to the Omaha Open, which at the time was the biggest college open tournament in the nation. Oklahoma State, Iowa, everybody was there. And I remember like walking in as a junior college wrestler and seeing Iowa Hawkeyes on the mat and thinking, get ready, because Labette's here. Labette Junior Community College, right? Yeah. I remember thinking that. And I beat an Iowa guy that day. And my coach, like, brainwashed me. Now, I also got whooped by some guys too, but so I had
part both of the
spectrum. Yeah, all part of the process. But when my coach, like, I mean, you really, really believed it because he was able to first build relationships with us and then put that into our brains and change that mindset. Now, let me transition that in. So whenever you finished competing, you became a college wrestling coach. Like, tell me about that journey. How did that happen?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I became the, I was the assistant wrestling coach at Virginia for a couple of years. I actually went off and, you know, traveled for the better part of a year. I went backpacking through Central America by myself. Went through Europe and then I led adventure camping tours, met my eventual wife doing that. And then I got called back into wrestling, the assistant wrestling coach at Virginia, Brendan Buckley, who went on to Columbia. He was the head coach at Columbia, then Cal Poly. Now he heads Beat the Streets up in New York City. He's the executive director. But Buckley left. And actually, Buckley left. And it was Jim Stanek. And then I think it was Jim Stanek who I would replace, actually. And Jim led. Jim was an All-American at Cornell. But Jim left. And he, so the spot was open to be the assistant coach. And Lenny Bernstein, the head wrestling coach there, called me. And so I became the assistant of Virginia, and I was that assistant coach who, you know, probably was insufferable to some extent to Lenny, Coach Bernstein, because, you know, I was that guy. I felt like, you know, we got to push these guys harder. We got to do this. We got to, you know everything, right? When you're a 23, 24-year-old, like, you know everything. And then I became a head coach. So I applied for the Slippery Rock University position. I became the youngest Division I head coach in the country. And all of a sudden, I realized, wait a second, there were actually reasons why Coach Bernstein was making these decisions. And I never like butted heads with him or anything like that. But, you know, you just kind of think like, oh man, there's, we could do this and do things differently. And then I get to become a head coach and I realize, okay, there's some, you know, there are other consequences, other considerations, other stakeholders involved here. And you learn that as you elevate through the leadership ranks. And so I coached at Slippery Rock. Unfortunately, the writing was on the wall there. The direction of the program, they were removing funding from the program. They actually, from the time that I got hired to the time that I set foot on campus, they stripped some funding from the program. It was not a good situation. The leadership there was, had made some decisions that were not in favor of the program and sustainability. So anyway, I coached there for a few years and then had a chance to come back to Charlottesville, went back to Virginia, and I was the director of essentially the Cavalier Wrestling Club and the Regional Olympic Training Center there when I returned to Charlottesville.
Yeah, nice. So Coach Jack Spates was at Slippery Rock. So,
that's right.
Yeah, that's right. So my dad used to have a poster hanging up, a guy that was from my hometown, actually. He had moved to another town in high school, but he beat Jack Spates in the national finals at one point.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and I love Coach Spates, and so that's how I knew he was at Slippery Rock, so.
Yeah, I mean, Slippery Rock has such a great tradition. Stan Dezik was a world champion. I mean, just so many, you know, a lot of All-Americans and, you know, highly successful wrestlers came out of Slippery Rock over the years.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, a big part of what you do, and of course your podcast, right? So talking about how to achieve success through failure, and I know this is it's part of your motto, mantra, those type of, you know, your beliefs. And man, you do such a good job explaining it and bringing that out in people on your podcast. So tell me, how did you move from coaching college wrestling into what you do now, into podcasting? I mean, just that this, I've heard you talk about it, but this journey is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. So, you know, I had this string of successes in my life. I was a Division I All-American, and then I had got 2 degrees from the number one public school in the country at UVA. So, and, you know, I trained at the Olympic Training Center, and then I went on, you know, become the youngest Division I head coach. And so I had this like string of successes, and then, you know, started my first business and sold that. And then I started my second business and I was like, man, this is going to be the business that really sets my family up for success and, you know, sets us up long-term financially. And, you know, I did what I know how to do best, and that's work hard. So I put my head down and I went to work and I worked and I worked and I worked. And you know, eventually, like 2 years later, I look up and I realize that everything that I was looking to build in my life, which was balance and success and a great situation for my family, I had destroyed. Like, I had focused all of my time and energy on the business and not enough on my relationship with my wife or spending time with my kids. We had debt up to our eyeballs, a failed business. I was in the worst physical shape of my life. I had, by and large, stopped working out. And, you know, it was a low point for me at that point. And I realized, like, you know, this is not the trajectory that I thought I was going to be on in my life. I was shutting down that business, Riot Sports Marketing. Some listeners may have heard of it. We were doing a lot of marketing for wrestling programs, built a software, et cetera. But it just didn't get the traction. It was probably a little too early for a lot of the technology we were doing, bringing in Twitter and Facebook and a lot of just social media, et cetera, to market programs. but as I was shutting that business down, I remember like scrolling on Craigslist, scrolling past jobs for like paper boys and unpaid internships, thinking like, how did I get here? Like, all this success that I've had, everybody says, you know, once you've wrestled, everything else in life is easy. And, you know, all the life lessons that you learn from being a student athlete, that's all you ever need. And here I am, like, broke and broken, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I literally laid down in bed one night staring at the ceiling, and I was thinking like, how did I get here? And what was in place in my life when I was competing at a high level, maximizing my potential, that's not in place in my life now? And I realized it was literally like a camera lens, like coming into focus. I could see there were four things. There were four things that were in place in my life when I was competing and living at my maximum potential that were not in place in my life now. And number one, so I'll take you through the four steps. Number one, I knew what I valued. Like, I probably couldn't have stated those things as core values, but like, I think about my coaches who I respected. They were tough people. They were respected. They lived disciplined lives. They often went on to success after the sport. So I respected them and I valued those things. And then number two, I had goals that aligned with those values. And a lot of times what you see out in the real world now is like, people have goals that align with what's parked in their neighbor's driveway or what's on social media or what they see in the mass media, and as opposed to what's in here, like what's really important to them. So that was the second part, is I had aligned goals. And then the third part was I had what I call an environment of excellence. I had coaches who kicked me in the rear when I needed a kick or lifted me up when I needed lifted up. I had athletic trainers and strength and conditioning coaches and nutritionists and sports psychologists and all these people around me in this environment, you know, teammates who had similar standards as me. And I realized, like, I don't have this in my life now. And so this is this environment of excellence. And that's the third piece. And then the fourth piece is this. It's, I had a plan for follow through. And out in the real world, some people will set goals, most people don't, but even if they do set goals and even if they do write them down, they don't have a plan for execution when the car breaks down or you lose your job or the economy goes in the tank or there's a global pandemic or, you know, kid gets sick or something like any of these things happen. It just throws people off and they put their goals up on a shelf and then they just drift through life. And so I realized that I could operate at this high level again if I figured out how to recreate this structure. And that's what I did. So I recreated that structure in my life. Long story short, I tripled my income and healed my relationship with my wife and spend more time with my kids and got back in shape again. I've done half marathon and Spartan race and marathon and whatnot more recently. But it just put me back on this track. And fast forward a little bit, I did a TEDx talk. I titled Why I Teach My Children to Fail. And that led to some speaking opportunities. And then that eventually led to the podcast that you referenced. And so this podcast, I've interviewed like Navy SEALs and CEOs and astronauts and Olympic gold medalists, et cetera, world champions. And I realized that this framework, like this structure, is not just a gym thing. This is actually like this universal framework for success. And so that led me into coaching, into this job, this work that I'm doing now, this business of being an executive and life coach is helping people implement this structure and this framework in their life. And it's been absolutely incredible, just the results that people get and being able to coach in this role.
Yes, it's amazing you said that, because I think a lot of times as athletes, like you said, we have these structures in place. And I know that I did this. When I finished competing as an athlete, I remember I always told myself, like, okay, I love to lift weights and work out and stay in shape. I don't just do it for wrestling. And then I finished my senior season of wrestling, and then I'm going to stay on as an assistant coach. And I remember like a month or two later, like in there lifting weights by myself and just being like, okay, I thought I loved this because I loved it, but I had a national championship or I had an All-American to look. I had this goal.
There was a purpose.
Yeah, there was a purpose. Now, what is my purpose? Like, I'm just sitting here lifting weights, right? So I had to readjust my mind big time to be able to go back and figure out what was I doing when I was the most successful, like you just said. One of the things I love that you do, Coach, is you take very complicated things and you break them down simply, right? You break them down into four steps.
I have a simple mind. I can't think about complex things. So
I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I coached football for a number of years. And so I'm able to, same thing. Take complex things, break them down, because it's the only way I can think. I'm not smart enough to think more complex than that. So I learn a lot of things when I'm listening to your podcast and the things that you do. Now, you've had on just some absolutely incredible guests. And so this is something that I was good at school. I was a 3-time academic All-American. I didn't care about school until I got to college. And then some point my freshman year, I just decided if I got to be here, I might as well learn, right? But I didn't truly value like self-growth and personal growth and things like that until I became an adult. And then I kind of got into that world, and now I highly value it. So one of the things I love about podcasting, like right now I have you on here, this is sort of like free training for me as well, right? We're getting the information out.
That's why I love hosting my podcast, to get to talk to these great people and learn. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I know that it's probably almost impossible because you have so many phenomenal guests on, but think about what are two, maybe three of the top things that you've learned interviewing some of your guests that you're just like, dude, like this is, everybody should know this, or why didn't I think about it this way? What are two or three things that have really just struck you?
Yeah, I give you a couple that come right to the top of my head. So I like to ask my guests, like, what's one habit that you most feel is responsible for your success? Like one thing that you've done over the years that is most responsible for your success. And you always expect to hear like the Olympic gold medalist to tell you something about their training, or the New York Times number one bestselling author to tell you something about their writing habits or something like that. But it's never that. It's always some version of pause. It's never doing the thing that they're most successful for. So like, you know, things like working with a coach, for example, or journaling, or planning your week in advance, prayer, meditation, things like this. It's always some version of stepping off of the treadmill of life. And instead of doing, it's some version of pause. And so I've coined the phrase or the term productive pause. And the definition is this: a productive pause is a short period of focused reflection around specific questions that leads to clarity of action and peace of mind. And that's it. Like that's the secret. If there is such a thing as the secret to success, it's not doing the thing, it's hitting the pause button, asking yourself questions like, how do I win the day? Or what's most important here now? Or what resources am I not using yet? Asking these questions that bring you, like I said, clarity of action and peace of mind. So if you want to achieve some goal, okay, I'll give you an example, like in wrestling, you know, if you could ask me, you know, what's the 1 hour, if I could break it down to just look at the one single hour that was the most valuable, most well spent, the most important hour of my entire season, it's always that 1 hour that I would spend preseason sitting down with my coaches, laying out the plan for my season, identifying what my goals are and making a plan to achieve them. Like, that is it. That was a productive pause. Like, what are your goals? What's your plan to achieve them? And creating, like, that was the hour, that leveraged hour allowed me to perform at a higher level and have clarity of action and peace of mind all season long. So it's that productive pause is the one thing that I've taken most from interviewing all these guests, whether they're successful in business or sports or entertainment, you name it. That's what helps people find success. So that's number one. If I was to share a second one, I'll give you just one really tactical thing. And it is, so I interviewed Tim Ferriss, who was a wrestler. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but he's a five-time number one New York Times bestselling author, has one of the biggest podcasts in the world, I mean, in the Tim Ferriss Show. So I got to interview him that back episode 246 and 247. And he asks what he calls absurd questions. These questions that help you get outsized results. So asking yourself things like, and he has sort of this list of sort of questions that he's taken from various sources, questions like this, like how do you, if you could achieve your 10-year goals in 6 months, what would you do? Like, how could you achieve your 10-year goals in 6 months? So you ask yourself these questions that are just huge, hard to answer questions that you almost have to suspend belief in reality for just a moment to actually attack a question like this. But when you ask a question like this is just another version of a productive pause. It brings you clarity of action, you know, and peace of mind.
Yeah, that's invaluable wisdom. So I know I'm going to go back and re-listen to this. Take notes, you know, and always tell everybody, man, take notes, right? Don't just leave it up to your brain and to your mind. I listen to podcasts a lot while I run. I listen to yours a lot while I run. And there are many times I'm a wrestler, right? I don't like to stop when I'm running. I got to grit it out and make it through. But I have to stop a number of times. I'll say, like, okay, I'm going to wait till I get to this corner up here, but I'm going to stop. I have to take notes on my phone because if not, I'm going to forget it.
Yeah.
Valuable information. You know, so anyone listening right now, go make sure you go back, make sure you take notes and think about things a little differently. So like you said, I mean, you're taking almost like the working backwards type thing. Here's the end goal. I'm going to work backwards. You just have to think about it a little bit different. But Andy Andrews is one of my favorite authors in the world. And he talks about being a noticer. And he notices a lot of these little things that tie successful people together, right? And so like you said, out of all these people you have figured out that it's this productive pause is one of the times that you can stop. You can question the way I'm doing things. So I'm not actually doing right. I'm looking, is there a better way?
That's right.
Yeah, that's huge. Okay. So just listening to you even right now, not even just like your previous podcast, but you're not afraid to jump out there and do stuff. So a guy who can finish college and then just say, you know what, I'm going to go backpack in Central America or things like that. I just had Tanner Gardner on. He was a three-time Stanford. He wrestled for me.
He's at Rice. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's at Rice and Tanner's an amazing young man. I remember one time he just called me and he was like, coach, I just got done. And so he had backpacked across Europe. And then I think he was somewhere in Central America and he's like, yeah, I just got done with this trip, man. You got to put it on your bucket list. And like, Tanner's crazy. This goes even everywhere. And like, he does all kinds of stuff. Right. So a lot of people are afraid to step out of their comfort zone. They're afraid to not even just do big, but to even dream big. But let's say that there's somebody out there listening right now and they want to start their own business. They want to be an entrepreneur. Or maybe they want to become an All-American, whatever. They have this big goal, but they're so afraid of failure. They're so afraid to even get started. Like, what advice do you give to somebody like that?
So most people are afraid because they have this doubt, right? And they have this imposter syndrome, like who am I to achieve whatever, right? I've failed and I've struggled, so therefore I can't achieve X. I have a client who, he had just shared this in one of my group calls. I have mastermind calls, group calls with my clients, and we just kind of share wisdom. There's amazing wisdom in these people who I get to coach. But what he said is his father's very successful financially, and he said he grew up poor in Greece and he has two brothers, and the two brothers kind of used this poverty. They saw that as a reason why they can't be successful. And his father saw the poverty as, this is the reason why I can be successful. Like, I see and feel what poverty feels like. And it's this drive to get out of poverty. And so it's how do you interpret that? Everybody interprets their situation in different ways, you know, and we look at our situation. You can say, well, I can't achieve that thing because of this this background I have, or I can't achieve it because of that background. It's up to you to decide, right? Whether you were born into a family that has a lot of money or a little bit of money, that could be your reason for being successful or your reason for saying, I can't do that. Right. So it's up to you. It's your choice how you get to look at that and evaluate that. We look at, people I've interviewed on my podcast, Eric Weinmayer. I've talked about him a couple times recently on my podcast. Actually, he was a wrestler, coincidentally, too. But he summited Mount Everest. He whitewater kayaked the Grand Canyon. I mean, either one of these is like a lifetime achievement for anybody. He did both. And he's blind. He's blind. Like, what's your excuse? What's your excuse? I'm talking to you, me, the listener, like that little voice that's inside of us, that of self-doubt. Like, what's your excuse? Because everybody has one. Everybody has an excuse. And it depends on how you choose to interpret that. And if you look at your situation, identify your unfair, like what's your unfair advantage? We all have it. We all have the unfair advantage. I was poor. I grew up rich. I have this degree. Don't have that degree. I live in this town. Whatever it is, like, look at that as your unfair advantage. And that's what successful people do. They see their unfair advantages. They look at obstacles and they see opportunities. I mean, I went through this myself just recently going into the whole COVID-19 shutdown, and I lost a bunch of business right away because I'm a speaker. I stand in front of groups and I speak. That's one of the things that I do. And then I have coaching clients, and I lost a bunch of business in like 2 days. And I started getting like scared, like nervous, like real, like, you know, I was getting like, I don't have like an anxiety problem. I haven't really experienced that, a lot of that myself. And I know a lot of people have, and it's very common. But I was like nauseous for a couple days and I wasn't eating. And I'm like, I think this is anxiety. and I was literally in the shower one morning sort of thinking about this. And I said, wait a second, Jim, like, what would you say to one of your clients? Like, what would you say to one of your clients who's experiencing this? I would say, where's your unfair advantage? Where's your unfair advantage? Where are you uniquely qualified to serve? And that's a key word here. Serve is to find that servant heart in you. Like, where do you have an unfair advantage and you're uniquely qualified to serve? And when I asked myself that, all these ideas started coming to me. And it's totally changed the trajectory of my business. And it's just gone in a really positive direction because I shifted the way I'm looking at the same obstacle that I had before. I just chose to look at it differently. I chose to ask myself hard questions. And the listener, you can ask yourself the same question, whatever challenge, whatever obstacle, whatever thing you have that's holding you back right now, like ask yourself, like, where's my unfair advantage? Where am I uniquely qualified to serve the world? Maybe it's where you're geographically located. Maybe it's I'm friends with this guy or this girl who knows this thing, or someone can connect me. Or maybe it's this degree that you have, or this network that you have, or this connection, or some skill that you have. Like, where's your unfair advantage? Leverage it and use it, because everybody else in the world who's found success has. Bill Gates, he was born in 1955, which is like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and all these people, like the most successful people in technology, were born in those years, right around that time, in those 2 years, 55 and 54 and 55, I think it was, in Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Outliers. He talks about this, but he had this access to a computer that like no kid in America had, but his school, this private school that he went to, bought a computer and they didn't limit access, and he got all these hours logged. That was his unfair advantage. And guess what? He's one of the wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah.
Take advantage of it.
That's awesome. That's excellent advice. And a lot of times we don't know what we don't know. So how important is it? So the name of my podcast is Coach P's Perspective, right? I think.
Right.
So sometimes we have these thoughts, but we're kind of stuck in self-limiting belief. How important is it to have, let's say, a coach or a third party, or even maybe like a mastermind group, somebody you can bounce these ideas off of to bring these things out so that you can pivot? Maybe somebody's business is struggling right now in this time, and maybe they already have all the tools they need. They just haven't been able to put it together yet. So how important is it to go outside of yourself to gain some additional perspective?
Let's put it in wrestling terms. Jordan Burroughs, Adeline Gray, Kyle Snyder, best, some of the best in the on the planet at what they do. I don't need a coach. I'm like one of the best at what I do. What if they said, I don't need a coach? I don't need teammates. I don't need a coach. I got this. Like, no, like you don't have this. You need a coach. And like the stakes are so much bigger for us out in the real world, right, coach? I mean, we have, you know, we have friends and family and jobs and opportunities. Like there's so much more at stake right now than getting on the podium at the national championships. It's our lives and our livelihoods. So trying to do it alone, it's you're missing an opportunity and you're missing the point of the value that you gained as an athlete and in athletics where you have someone who kicks in your rear end or who's asking you the hard questions or is holding you accountable. And all these teammates who are setting the standard, like you're accountable to them, they're accountable to you. You're missing out on that. If you don't, you've got to recreate this framework, this structure into your life through having a coach, joining or creating a mastermind group. And that's how success happens. And you look at successful people and you realize we think that Steve Jobs and the Bill Gates and the whoever else we want to say, we think they did it on their own. They didn't. They had coaches. I mean, Eric Schwartz, the chair of Google's parent company, Alphabet, like he says, everybody needs a coach. Bill Gates, coincidentally, he said the same thing. Everybody needs a coach. You know, but most people aren't willing to look into that or invest in that or create that framework or structure. But it is something that we see in every walk of life for people who are successful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny because we grow up going to school and you have a teacher or being part of an athletic team and you have a coach. And then we become adults. And I think this is especially, and I can only speak from the perspective of a man, but I think this is especially men do this. We become an island, right? We sure. want to figure things out. We want to be real good. And then we don't want to ask.
We want to be self-reliant, independent. I shouldn't need anybody. We feel like, right? I shouldn't have to depend on anybody else, but we do.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I love hearing that. Now, Coach, as we get ready to kind of close this out, I want to put you on the hot seat and you can expound upon this as much as you want. And you're going to get to pick from these three. All right. So I want you to either tell me about a hero, a heartbreak, or a highlight in your life, a hero, a heartbreak, or a highlight, and then kind of expound upon it. Like how did it change the trajectory of your life or just making huge impact on you? Hero, heartbreak, or highlight?
Okay. I could share one, man. Highlight, you know, my gosh, you know, like having children, everybody talks about the college is the best days of your life, man. I don't know about that. Like having kids and a family, this is just amazing. Heartbreak, all the failures, you know, that I've experienced from whether in wrestling or in business, but all the success that they've brought me. But let me share a hero. And I hope people don't roll their eyes at this, and I hope people don't see this as sort of a textbook answer, but I'm sitting here, I told you before we hit record on this, Coach, that I'm in Cape Cod. I live in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm in Cape Cod visiting with family up here. We have in-laws here. I'm sitting in a little makeshift basement office space that I've got, and the picture on the wall in front of me is Jesus in the Last Supper, and like that's my hero. Like Jesus, whether you are religious or not, whether you're Christian faith or not, like Jesus was a servant. Like Jesus served. I mean, this is a guy who is known far and wide. I mean, this is thousands of years since his death, and he's maybe the most recognized name in the world, even beyond like Mickey Mouse and Oprah Winfrey. And you know, this guy, he did nothing but serve. He served. He was a humble servant. And I find that whenever I lead with that, it takes away all my fears. It takes away any challenges that I might have. Like if you're going into a sales situation, we're trying to sell something, right? We're all trying to sell something. If we start with like, ooh, how do I make the sale? How do I make money? Or how do I get the promotion? It's really hard. You feel like you're grinding the gears. But when you say, wait a second, how do I love and how do I serve? How do I love this person I'm trying to sell a car to? How do I love this person? How do I go into my boss and ask for a raise and and love my boss and serve, find that, you know, turn this around into a way that I'm truly serving from my heart. And whenever you lead with that, it changes everything. You can put your fears aside. You can put your self-doubt aside, because it's not about making money or getting the promotion or getting yourself ahead in life. But if you find you, if you can come from that place and find that place within you that is from serving, it's like the words just come out right. And good things tend to happen. So that's my hero.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm a Christ follower.
I know you are.
Yeah, one of my favorites, Michael Jr., he's a Christian comedian. And Michael Jr. often does his comedy shows, but then he also builds in life lessons within the shows. But he was talking one time and he said that for years, he just tried to figure out how to get laughs. How do I get laughs? And then at some point, it's like God kind of put it in his spirit or whatever, kind of flipped it around and said, it's not about me. How do I get laughs? How do I serve? And I believe in what I do right now, making people feel joy and laughing. I believe that's part of my ministry, right? Is what he was saying. But how do I serve these people? And he said, just going in with that mindset changed everything for him.
I bet. Yeah. How do I get laughs? Like how I earn them and get them versus like, how do I bring laughs to them? How do I bring them entertainment and joy and things to laugh at? It's a subtle shift, but it's a significant shift in some ways too. But it changes everything. I encourage the listener to try that mindset shift out, whether you're arguing with your spouse or debating with your kids or trying to make a sale, whatever it is, find that servant heart inside you.
100%. So, well, Coach, thank you so much for spending your time. I would love to sit on here for 3 hours and pick your brain, but
yeah, likewise, Coach.
Yeah. So we'll keep this where it's at. So much knowledge, so much wisdom that you just dropped on us in this 35, 45 minutes, whatever it was. I appreciate it. Where can we go and contact you, follow you on social media, get your services, because you are world-class at coaching people up. So tell us, where can we find those things?
Yeah, I appreciate it. So jimharshawjr.com is my website. If you want to, I offer free one-time clarity calls, jimharshawjr.com/apply. If you want to apply for a coaching call with me, there are some limited time slots on my calendar, so you can just get access there. Or any social media, you can just Google Jim Harshaw, but Jim Harshaw on Twitter, Jim Harshaw Jr. on Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn. By the way, if you reach out to me on LinkedIn, I encourage everybody to do so. Let me know you heard me on this podcast, because I get a million people reaching out to me on LinkedIn. I ignore most of them if I don't know who they are. But if you say, hey, I heard you on Coach P's Perspective, then we'll definitely connect. So, but yeah, that's how people can find me.
All right. Awesome, Coach. Again, thank you so much for your time. I'll make sure I put all of your contact information in our show notes so people can get a hold of you. And I encourage anybody that's looking for a life coach, a business coach, a, you know, personal development coach out there, reach out to Coach Harshaw. And then make sure that you're going to listen to his podcast, you know, Success to Failure. This has been an honor for me, Coach. I'm absolutely blessed and grateful to have you on.
Yeah, likewise, Coach. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, this has been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Until next time, man, may God bless you and shine his face upon you. Peace. Hey, before you go, I want to go ahead and direct you over to lanefrostbrand.com. This is my favorite clothing and apparel company. It's family owned and operated, and it is a championship company representing and honoring the late, great world champion bull rider, Lane Frost. Lane was an icon. He was one of my heroes growing up. So I'm proud every single time I put on that Lane Frost hat, every single time I put on one of those Lane Frost t-shirts, got the LF on it. I'm proud to represent. I think you will be too. Go check them out, lanefrostbrand.com.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep. Pop, lock, and rock. Coach P, who never stops.